Here's one for you. Can Adam give us some ideas on how to recover from pneumonia? Maybe some breathing exercises or what foods can help or how to detox from taking antibiotics and getting all the x-rays. Also, what motion or trauma could be behind the lung problem? Wow, you got a lot of stuff there. You want all your answers in one paragraph. But he'll do what he can here.
Grief. Grief is a major cause of pneumonia. And if you don't know you're grieving, you know for sure when you get pneumonia. Because I've seen people, after they break up in a marriage, get blood in their lungs even, and all kinds of, it used to be tuberculosis, but pneumonia is the favorite way of dealing with grief. And of course, when I say dealing with, I'm being sarcastic, because it's not the proper way to deal with it. Pneumonia also is the cure for cancer, but not a satisfactory one, just as TB is a cure for cancer too. So you have to understand acid and alkaline. Pneumonia means you're way too over-alkaline and you want to acidify. Why does it happen in hospitals? Because surgical shock makes you hyper-alkaline. And so you're subject to pneumonia. That's why hospitals have it's not the germs that are available. Those germs are available in any rock concert or farmer's market that we go to. It's actually the trauma of the surgery, particularly gallbladder surgery. You're vulnerable for pneumonia. Also, the diet they give you is going to be further proof of that. And if you're taking omega-3 fatty acids, you're in double jeopardy.
Double jeopardy. The game show, Double Jeopardy. Wow.
Yes, and it's a game. But anyway, pneumonia, a very serious disease. People die from it all the time, especially when they get supposedly old. But how come it's not the really old people that usually die? It's the middle-aged person. And middle-aged, we're more alkaline than we ever are at any other time. We're acidic when we're born, and we die acidic. Hmm. And acid grows muscle. Alkaline tears down muscle. Both are necessary. I need to tear down a muscle to rebuild it in bodybuilding. As Ray Pete put it, if you put a tourniquet around your arm and hold it still, you get cancer. But if you move your muscle with the tourniquet, you get muscle. That's the difference.
So I guess there are times with pneumonia that you kind of sort of have to. Is there do an antibiotic just to keep you on the planet?
You know, there's nothing wrong by antibiotics. In fact, I saw on a popular health show, the person was talking about how H. pylori causes stomach ulcers. And then the person was talking about taking antibiotics, and the host of the show said, oh, that'll cause an ulcer. Well, don't they realize that they kill H. pylori with an antibiotic? What the heck are they thinking? Antibiotics are common in nature. We eat antibiotics all the time. It's basically antioxidants, and they're out in nature. So if you eat, you can get all the antibiotics you want from just eating whole foods on time and get rid of their pneumonia. You don't need their antibiotics. But because you're under their control and you're not going to be able to eat what you're going to eat, then I would say take the antibiotic therapy. But how many people take it and they die anyway?
Yeah,
the hospitals must not know what they're doing.
Boy, duh. So many cases.
It's tragic.
I've known two different, that come out of hospitals and they just have, they can't get rid of diarrhea. And it's generally this, what is this thing? C. diff, right? They get it, to say they pick up some bug in there. I wonder, would there be, have you any ideas from that? I have a good friend of mine, and she broke her hip and was in the hospital, and now the diarrhea just won't stop. And we kind
over
of
over alkalinity.
So what would she need to get more acid?
Acid. She needs more good protein.
Okay.
And if she's a vegan, she eats beans and meat. If she eats meat, get a good steak or whatever. Bacon and eggs.
Okay, so. So you think it's just too much, too alkaline.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely too alkaline. When you go in a hospital, first of all, if you have a mental problem, say say the IRS is coming after you, you're automatically going to worry and cause an over-alkaline condition. Well, a lot of people that go to a dental office or a hospital, they're already in that state. Then the simple cutting on the human body induces a catabolic extent that makes you hyper-alkaline. You want ultimate alkalinity? Get radiation therapy. Now, anyone who goes in a hospital gets a simple x-ray, and much, much more, they get either chemotherapy or x-ray therapy for their cancer or whatever. They are so alkaline, they're going to get pneumonia. Hmm. They give people pneumonia because they don't realize that after a shock, you have to acidify. That's called anabolic and catabolic. It's explained in detail by Ravisi. But how many people read Ravisi? I finally have got somebody on Facebook that is actually reading Ravisi's textbook.
So, but in my friend's case, Adam, she could very well have some kind of a C. diff infection that's causing it, couldn't she? And would the acid diet help then?
Oh, yeah, it would kill that.
No, really? Oh, okay. All right.
Well, how do they, how does nature protect against bacteria? They make all foods acid. Do you know that 99.9% foods are acid? Percent of foods are acid?
Really?
99.9%. Look at the federal guidelines. That's before it goes in your tummy. When then the volatile acids are released, and what's left but the alkali residue. Alkali is what ages us. People promoting an alkaline diet are aging themselves. Now, there's a balance. If you go from acid in the morning, alkaline in the evening, that's the way nature designed it. But as soon as you go alkaline, you're going to get diarrhea and you're going to get bacteria. Hmm. Acidity in the plants is to protect against bacteria. Now, the downside, if you get too acid, then you get viruses. That's why they grow in the summer mostly and not in the winter. So you have winter bacteria and viruses in the
So I could recommend for her to maybe just really beef up the protein and see if that doesn't slow things down a little bit in the colon.
Now, ideally, if we had a hospital, we'd get 7 tests to prove if she's acid or alkaline. But you can already tell if she's in a hospital, she's over alkaline.
Well, she was. She's at home now.
No doubt about it. So she needs good food on time. And also to deal with whatever the problem is. And by the way, I got a note here from Vibrant Gal, which is true. For diarrhea, when it's unstoppable, and this again is a Band-Aid, but it does work, and you want to stop the person from losing all their minerals out of their butt, obviously, potassium, magnesium, etc. Simple white rice. They eat white rice in the morning. They eat white rice in the middle of the day. They eat white rice. White rice, contrary to all this resistant starch BS that's out there, is totally digested before it gets in the colon. So you have no residue. So it stops all of that. A good friend of mine named Hugo Ponti developed, when he tried to do the liver flush, because his dad had had liver cancer, he started running out his end. He could put a mouthful of water in his mouth and it would squirt out his end. Right, immediately it would move other things in his colon. Nothing was working, and I didn't even have anything to advise. Finally, through experimentation and through a little studying, I think, however he got the idea, he realized that the only thing that would work is white rice. He took it night and day, and the end of his diarrhea.
Well, does it matter what kind? There's all kinds of white rice. Do you think it matters?
I would say any kind of white rice, and I would probably prefer the long grain, but I don't think it makes that much of a difference.
Yeah, probably doesn't. I mean, you can get jasmine.
Basmati's okay, too, I would think. You won't know until you experiment with it, you know, but I think basmati would be good, too. Basmati white, though. It cannot be brown. It cannot have any cellulose in it.
Well, good. No, and so she could then go ahead and eat the protein with that, too, right?
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh well. No. Not to stop the diarrhea. She's got to just completely stop it with white rice for at least a day.
Oh, I see. Just do the white rice, and then once you get there, then maybe you start adding protein.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because that's not going to treat the over alkalinity, but it will stop the flushing so she doesn't lose everything out of her butt. And that's important. Then after that, then she builds up her acidity gradually. You can't just become acid. Well, actually, it's very hard to become acid, but very easy to become alkaline. Drink a quart of water and you're alkaline. Mm-hmm. Whether it's acidic water or alkaline water, doesn't matter. You have alkalized yourself, and it will take 3 days minimum for a healthy person to re-acidify themselves.
So what about, of course, all of the raw foodies and the raw foods and the vegans and the juicing people, and juicing's great, and promote this idea that, you know, use more alkalizing green and you feel better and you're healthier and all of that. So you say they're off track a bit.
Well, quite a bit. First of all, we're not meant to take concentrated juices in our body. Now, for certain cleanses, there's no problem for a little while, particularly on our over-acidic diet with phosphorus and things like that that we're taking. That's not acidity. The proper acidity is guaranteed by carbon dioxide, but that's not how people get it. They get it through phosphates and other things, and that causes a problem. Carbon dioxide is the best. In fact, your friend, if she did a variety of Buteyko breathing, which certainly wasn't invented by him, it was invented thousands of years before, would help also. But basically, in emergencies, white rice would do the job. And Doodle agreed with me.
I wonder what she's going on down there.
Or she's barking at somebody.
I think she sees somebody across the creek.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
It's Mrs. Quail and her babies, maybe?
That's right. One time when Adam was on the show, I asked him why my belly button had become so small, to which he replied it was an effort to detach from my mother, possibly. That being the case, I know you have that belly button tool. Oh, and wanted to know your personal experience so far. It's been a Is it painful or effective? And if you get a minute, I would appreciate. Yeah, my body worker recommended it. Have you ever seen one of these things, Adam? They're like a little T, so you can hold it with two hands, and it's got this rubber thing, and you put it in your belly button, and you can kind of move around, and you can feel little sore spots and play around with, you know, little trigger points and acupuncture points. And I do it, you know, fairly often when I go to bed, just to relax and do that a little bit. I don't know what it's doing, but you have any thoughts on that, Adam, the belly button tool?
Well, it works on the belly button, but it won't clear a person from their mother because you need to balance both the brain and the umbilicus, and that's done by concentrating on the third eye, supposedly, the center of your forehead, and your belly button simultaneously. And, of course, you really can't do that, so you'll go back and forth and eventually can clear your mother that way. Now, that's a technique to work on that. Of course, the real way to clear the person's mother is either do the impossible or do the forbidden. Those are the two things. And, of course, we really can't do them. You can't strangle your boss, but you have to get that energy out. And you can't have $1 trillion like Bill Gates or someone. But you can improve to be one of the well-off people at least. Once those traumas are overridden, then you've cleared your mother. Mother is prosperity, money, mother, they all begin with an M. And so if you clear your mother, you clear your financial problems. Nobody with a mother trauma is poor. The poor will always be with us, as J.C. Water Walker put it. But the truth is that once you clear your mother, you're not going to be one of them.
So prosperity is a mom thing.
It's a mom thing. The mother, where do we get to our first... Why do we rub the Buddha's belly in the Chinese restaurant?
I don't know. Why do we do that?
The umbilical cord is where we're connected to mom. Oh. And mom is the one who gives us prosperity. It's called milk of the breast. Hmm. And so she gives us to fulfillment anything we want as little babies. Then we get detached from the mother. And what does dad give us? Go out and...
Go to work.
Go to work. We need you to support us too because I can't pay the bills. But that's mom's prosperity. So anybody with a prosperity problem, you better make peace with your mother.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And by the way, I know somebody, and this is a celebrity, by the way, but which I won't mention their name, but they using the big fat mouse, they said, their expression was, "I feel like I have an albatross around my neck." Well, she ended up with a grapefruit-sized tumor on the right side of her neck. And because she was with another celebrity who believed that left and right are male and female reversed, she thought it was the father. Well, when I told her it was the mother, she said, "You're the only person that's found that. Yes, it's my mother. I hate her." And I said, "Perhaps it's time to forgive your mother." She said, "I would rather die than forgive my mother." And 1 month later,
she died. She was gone. She actually said, "I would rather die than forgive my mother."
Well, she said very, and I even tried, her husband had a technique called, "Well, can you forgive yourself for not forgiving your mother?" And that didn't work either. She was determined to die because she couldn't work it out. She absolutely hated her mother. And this person was a very good therapist, amazing. But, you know, each of us can have this Achilles heel that isn't dipped in the river, and we get in trouble. All of us are subject to it, and, you know, whether we're Wayne, Andy, or anybody, we're subject to those little kinks in our mental armor, and they're still here because soul isn't going anywhere.
Ain't going anywhere. I think I think something needs to be talked about more and explored, and I'd like to with this, you know, this idea of really loving ourselves and not giving ourselves a hard time and guilt. I think it's just a scourge in humanity, just because we're brought up that way, and it's very hard on the body, and it's a tough one for most people, really, to give themselves a break today, like McDonald's.
You know, one of McDonald's mentors would get up every morning, drink his coffee, have his cigarette, and kiss his arms and say, "I love you."
Oh, that's great.
I love you, best thing going.
Yeah, it's hard when we get these ideas in our mind, which is, you know, the illusion in the matrix that we should be doing this, we should be doing that, we could do this better and all that stuff. And I'll just tell you, folks, any of it, I don't care how small it is a waste of time. Absolute waste of time, and it's just making it hard on yourself. Just keep going forward. Doesn't matter what you did 5 minutes ago, it's gone, poof. Just keep moving forward to do your dream, do your work, take care of your family, make your money, and whatever you want to do. You know, if you're retired, go fishing, but just do it 100%. Moving forward, because to look back 10 minutes ago is just the big matrix, eh, Adam? It's just...
Yep. You know, my friend Greg Whiteley gave me some good advice like that. It's called, you have to live your life 100%. So he said, if you're watching TV and you're watching your favorite basketball and ball game and the doorbell rings, you don't go partially to the door and you don't stay partially on the show. You 100% ignore the doorbell and watch the game, or you 100% turn the TV off and you give yourself to that person. Anything else is trauma.
Yeah, I agree. Boy. And yeah, so you can imagine what's going on in the multitasking world of people trying to, whatever, do this and drive and text and talk to people. And boy, how traumatic that is on the body. Whew.
It is tough. It's something new that we haven't had to deal with before. And before it was just, there was a big animal attacking us and we just concentrated on it. But we didn't have to have all these subplots going on about paying the bills and, oh, my insurance is due in 2 days and this and that and all that kind of stuff.
Here's an email. Does Adam think diatomaceous earth is safe for some clean out parasites in the digestive tract?
Absolutely not.
You don't like diatomaceous. You never have liked diatomaceous.
There's too much things to do with food to bother with that kind of stuff. And I wouldn't be breathing that stuff in. And in fact, a friend of mine was, they thought she had a fatal disease from the diatomaceous earth she was putting on her plants. It turned out to be something different and she was okay. But I wouldn't be messing with that. Whatever happened to food? We always got to do something inorganic now, you know, take something out of the earth or some rocks. Plants are made to eat rocks. A plant doesn't eat dead trees. And people People tell you, if you go to a nursery and your plant dies, they tell you you overwatered it. You cannot overwater a plant. You can only have dead trees in the pot that killed it. That's why if you take a, say you took a plant and you planted it where what would you call it? Its father was, another plant of its same species. Mm-hmm. It would die because it doesn't like dead relatives. You put a rival tree, you know, like say an apple tree, and then a peach tree can go there. It doesn't care. But you put a peach tree, that peach tree will die because until the roots are taken away. It's like if you have blood on the carpet, which is worse? You move into a house with blood on the carpet. It's menstrual blood, not too much of a trauma. A couple was murdered there at one time, and there's a blood stain in the carpet. That's a little more traumatic. But what if you were in a house and didn't clean your carpet, and the blood of your father and mother from their vicious murder was on that carpet? You'd be kind of traumatized. Well, plants have the same thing. It's called replant syndrome. Look it up.
Wow. Very interesting. Good stuff. Let's see. I'm finding more emails here. Getting tricky.
By the way, I have an important bulletin for people eating potatoes.
Oh, a bulletin. Okay. Let me see. I don't know if I have any bulletin music here. We should have something, shouldn't we? I don't know what, man.
The thing about potatoes, you hear Ray Pete talking about the ketones, and yet he seems to be against dextrinization. But I don't know if he knows that the research shows that until you reach a temperature of 380 degrees Fahrenheit, that's 170 degrees centigrade, which is the point where dextrinization or caramelization occurs, that you have no ketones and you don't have an aldehyde. So the ketones are the ones that have to combine with the ammonia to wipe it up. So if you're a mainstream doctor and he tells you don't eat potatoes because you have a kidney problem, he's right if you don't dextrinize it. But if you dextrinize the potato, then they're wrong. And Ray Pete is right. But he doesn't seem to know that about dextrinization. There's a clear, gigantic difference between a dextrinized food and a non-dextrinized one.
Clear, crystal clear, right?
Clear, 170 degrees centigrade for centigrade. You people drip, in drip, Britain drip. And
crystal clear.
You in Texas and California.
And I'm going to do one tonight. Matter of fact, right after the show, I'm going to put one in my little crock pot. I need to do it now. Actually, I found in my crock pot at 200 degrees at about 6 to 8 hours, 7 hours, perfect. Phew, perfect.
You know, here's the thing. It makes it much more digestible, but until you get to 338 degrees, you're not getting the protein.
Now, wait a minute, though. You told me the lower the dextrination, the better. Now you're changing on me.
For digestion, oh. But not protein, if you want protein. Now, most people get enough protein in their diet. If you're a meat eater and stuff, you don't need it. You need the other things that potato has. And potato has a lot of things going for it and is a soothing food. Potato's not Prozac. It's not milk, not Prozac. Mm-hmm. It's potatoes, not Prozac. So it's still an excellent food. But if you're bodybuilding, then I would suggest you go to the 338 degrees caramelization type.
But
otherwise, when you were having digestive problems, though, then I would have recommended
it really slow. I see. So now my tummy's fine. I go back to maybe more protein.
If your tummy's fine and you want more protein. Now, you probably, I would reckon you're eating a good source of protein.
I do. I have eggs. I have cheese. I have milk. I'm doing a really nice, what is it? CBD kind of marijuana, what hemp protein thing that's kind of fun. And, so I'm doing, and then also the gelatin that has protein, right?
And remember, a potato, even if it's not dextrinized, has a certain amount of protein. It just has the ketone reaction to give you maximum protein by the 338 degrees Fahrenheit reaction. So either one is good for you.
Right.
And but if you're soothing your digestion, then you certainly want the way you're making it at 200 degrees Fahrenheit.
You know, I was thinking about it, and it was a curious thing about the tummy. You know, the government thing happened, what, in March of 2014, right? And for about as long as it took for, this is curious, for the tummy thing to manifest, right, maybe 3 years later or 2.5 years later, it's almost taken that long for it to go away.
Yep, and of course it was
there. Does that make sense?
I mean, is that... It starts at the beginning. Actually, what time did they come to the door? Because that would show the organ that was affected.
Oh, okay, I know exactly what time. It was about 8:15.
8:15, summer or winter time?
It was March.
March, that's going to be winter time, right? That's winter time, so 8:15, stomach time.
Yeah, see, there you go, right there, boom.
There it is, bingo.
Bingo. So does that make, am I reading too much into that idea of the time of how long it's taken? Because, you know, the spiritual work I do, it's pretty deep. I mean, I don't fool around, and I, you know, it's taken a long time for this thing to just kind of, it's almost like it just unwinded over a couple years. Little by little by little. Interesting.
Well, no matter how much spiritual work we do, remember, a SWAT team showing up at your front door is a traumatic.
Yeah, it was kind of traumatic.
It would take a yogi some time to deal with that.
Kind of traumatic. It was kind of traumatic.
You probably were cooler than I would. They came looking for me. I'd probably be, I had a meltdown here as Vibrant Gal a few days ago over Yahoo, internet service not working correctly. They were going to change something, which turned out they didn't, but I had a virtual meltdown over something like that.
Did you?
So I took you being confronted by the SWAT team. Holy cow.
Holy. I did pretty well. I mean, I didn't freak out or anything, but I guess insider, who knows what was going on, you know?
Yeah, I do techniques like that. Now, I had a homegrown one. I had a panic attack. I got, again, too much multitasking. I was taking on too much responsibility. So what did I do when I had the panic attack? I did somersaults over and over and over again like a kid, and it went away.
Did you really? Right.
Yeah. This before I knew, I know other patterns to do now, but that worked fine. Mm-hmm. In fact, the somersaults are very healthy for a person. It's good for their spine. Kids do it naturally. You somersault forward, you somersault backwards, you somersault forward, and you do it regularly. It's a lot of fun, and it's very healthy for a person.
Hmm. Somersaults, yeah, let's do some of those. They're fun to do, aren't they?
They're easy, and anybody can do it. You don't have to do handstands and things. I used to do handstands for inversion therapy, headstands, handstands, all that yogic stuff, inversion therapy, bed. And I even did the boots for a while, but Donald Lay told me that would actually harm my eyesight. And when I noticed it was, I quit and went to the inversion bed. Mm-hmm. Both incline therapy and inversion have their advantages for certain conditions. If you've got GERD, then it's probably good to do the incline therapy. But other things, like brain function, you want all that blood in your brain. It helps the brain think.
You spent some years actually hanging upside down for an hour at a time?
Yeah, lots. You know, I used to go to the gym with the boots before I knew better and fall asleep. So they'd wake me up. Hey, you're hogging the inversion boots there.
Wow.
Actually fall asleep like a bat. And, you know, Batman Michael Keaton. Michael Keaton, he hangs upside down in one of his movies in 1989 by Tim Robbins' version of Batman. So bats hang upside down. They do fine.
The
reason they do that is they can't take off fast. They can take off fast by just dropping and their wings go. But right. From the ground, they're a lot clumsier than birds. So part of that is self-preservation. You know, you figure out what works for you. And since bats are heavier than birds, they hang upside down so they can instantly go into flight and don't have to do a lumbering takeoff. In fact, one way to catch a crow or keep them out of your garden, you put posts smaller than their wingspan. And then the crow can't take off. So he's smart enough. They have a big brain, crows. They're not going to land there because they know they can't take off.
That's funny. On the phone, who's this? Good morning. Hello? Pretty exciting call. Here's an email for Adam Bergstrom. Aside from the cookie protocol that Patrick learned from his uncle Tony for parasites, are there any pre-Civil War old school remedies for removing tapeworms from the human body that Adam has learned about over the years? Oh.
Well, the oldest school one is Samuel Hahnemann, who said, leave them alone. Don't do anything. Fix the gut.
Don't mess with them. I just fix your gut. Wow.
There, and then it makes the tapeworm where he's not going to hang around anymore.
Just doesn't want to be there any longer, yeah.
So, but if you can't do the terrain, then there's tricks like you can do. One of the things is to fast and eat garlic, and then put a bowl of milk by the anus. You're lying naked, and the tapeworm will crawl out for the milk because he's hungry.
Yeah, and then you can hit him with a hammer like you're doing the cookie protocol.
There we go.
Are you kidding me? Are you serial? You're just making this up, right?
No, actually, I learned about that.
They'll really crawl out of the anus because it's smelling the milk?
Now, you can put the milk in your mouth and they'll crawl out your mouth. But the person that told me about this, Dr. Margaret Burry, said that is not a good idea because you might vomit while it's coming out of your mouth. So best to put the bowl of milk at your butt. It's a serious technique and people have done it. I think when a person has a tapeworm, frankly, go get the antibiotic and then clean up the mess after you take the antibiotic. That's my way
just kind of get rid of it.
Because all the other ways, you know, and I've done it. You can use garlic. Tequila is a good version. I went on a tequila. What was I doing? One shot of tequila every night. You have to do it for an entire month. And that's the best way to get rid of parasites, by the way, one of the best ways,
really?
If you want to do it the hard way. But sometimes during that whole month, those tapeworms or whatever it is in there are chewing away at you. So sometimes it's best just to go get the antibiotic therapy. Mm. Antibiotics, Ray Pete is actually a little too fond of them, I think. But he's got a point that people make too much of them, that they're going to totally damage you and give you candida and everything. If you have a strong immune system, then you're not going to get candida. Simple as that.
Right.
As soon as you're done with using the antibiotic, you go on a very healthy diet, and you're probably over-alkaline from doing that. So you eat good proteins and good saturated fats, and you're back in fine fettle again.
Yeah. And we've all, I suspect most of us here today, you and I and everyone, we've all probably taken an antibiotic or two in our life, probably less than most because we've been, you know, nutritionally aware for a lot of years, most of us. So, but when we're still here, it hasn't killed us or, you know.
Let's put it this way. I've taken approximately 25 different antibiotics before I knew any better.
Really? Wow.
I was a virtual experiment. I had a problem that I thought was had to do with my intestines. And actually, it was my first wife that was the problem. Not her fault. It was me not adjusting to my first wife. So I'm not going to blame her for it. She was perfectly fine. She didn't know she married a maniac. Anyway.
You didn't tell her before like you were a maniac? You didn't say like, hey, here's a cautionary, I'm a maniac. I mean, you didn't tell?
Yeah, that's right. I should have cautioned her. But but anyway, she found out the hard way and, of course, divorced me, which any sensible person would have done at the time. But meanwhile, they were giving me antibiotic after antibiotic. And the doctor was very kind. Back then, you could go in the office, you know, they were your buddy. So he said, here, try this one this week. Oh, that didn't work. Try this one. Try that one. Then finally, he gave me a test. There's only two antibiotics left that you have any sensitivity to, so which one do you want to do first? And I did one, it didn't work, and I did the other, it didn't work. So then he said, okay, you have two choices. You take 3 months off from work, or you get blood transfusions. Guess which one I took, 3 months off from work. And then I still wasn't better, so I came back, and he gave me the same choice. Guess which one I took. So after 6 months off from work and playing and lying out in the sun and everything, I was healthy, and I went back to work. After 3 months of unemployment. I mean, why not milk it? That was 9 months.
Yeah.
Well, fun times.
Towards the end of my tummy karma, I was really grasping at straws and wanting to just to get over. And so I took about 3 different antibiotics. And there was absolutely nothing that happened with any one of those. I mean, nothing, good, bad, or indifferent. Like I never even took them.
Yeah, most tummy problems don't have much to do with antibiotics, despite the H. pylori thing, because 95%, you know, here's the funny thing. Americans have more ulcers than the developing world, but the developing world has much more H. pylori in their stomachs than Americans do. So all you have to do is do the math.
And also, too, I think, and isn't it true that if you see H. pylori come up on a blood test like I did, it's really the antibodies. It just means that you did have maybe an active form of it at some time. Is that true?
Oh, they're helpful. It's like, you know, they call it an infection. That's like calling lactobacillus in your mouth an infection.
Yeah.
It's there. It's part of the biome. They're with us. They're symbionts. They actually help us with things.
They're with
us. It's when you get under control, out of control. That's the problem.
Well, we all go down little black holes in our life, don't we? My goodness.
I was there. I took seriously about 25 different antibiotics, including chloramycetin. And they said, you know, you have about a 1 in 10,000 chance of getting fatal anemia. Oh, okay, I'll take it.
Yeah, I'll be fine. No,
pretty stupid back then.
Has Adam found a vitamin E supplement that he would recommend to people interested in using larger than USD amounts of the nutrient for clearing PUFAs? So vitamin E gets rid of PUFAs?
No.
No, okay, so, the premise is wrong.
But it can give you some protection. And the vitamin E is one of the few supplements that will not hurt you. So if you take it, but in the salmon farming industry, vitamin E doesn't work. They have to use synthetic Monsanto vitamin E, artificial ones to do that, because vitamin E simply doesn't work. Hmm. In fact, usually they combine the vitamin E with the ethoxyquin, I believe it's called. Monsanto invented it, but now everybody's using it, or the BHT or the BHA or the EQ something or other, all these different alphabet chemicals they use to substitute for vitamin E. But vitamin E can be pretty good. Oh, I've got another note from Vibrant Gal, aloe. Use aloe, too. Aloe does have vitamin E, and it has...
Oh, it does. Magnesium. Good. Oh, so I'm getting plenty of vitamin E. I drink a lot of aloe. So, but if you were going to get one, didn't you recommend one time get mixed tocopherol things?
Mixed, definitely. Don't fall for the, tocotrienols. Yeah. That's a bunch of baloney there. You know, tocotrienols only occurs in rice, palms. That should be a warning, beep, 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 right away. And what is it? I think there's a couple other minor things. But tocopherols, no plant can live without tocopherols. And that includes the alpha, the beta, the delta, and the gamma, all of them. Now, when you get mixed, they're not going to mix them fairly. They should put the milligrams of each one. So, that being said, I was using Now brand because at least they had their vitamin E in olive oil and didn't put it in a PUFA oil to break it down faster. But I'm not against vitamin E, and it is one of the safer supplements, and sometimes it's good to have a little insurance. I took it for a while, and certainly.
And certainly. Stay right there. We'll do another little break before we go. Previously with Dr. Mark Cercas, we were talking about the show with Dr. Thomas Cowan, who is mentioning sun and water equals energy.
One guy from MIT is a chemist, Dr. Daniel Nasseri. Mm-hmm. He agrees, and he basically says that he has these experiments. Sunlight turns water into energy. So his formula is sun plus water equals fuel.
Fuel.
Fuel. And then we go, what is fuel? What is the fuel of life? What's the fuel of the universe? Hydrogen. What's the fuel that's going to save the human race if we last long enough to be around? It's hydrogen. Hydrogen is, you know, necessary for life, for us, plants, rockets, planes. Well, not planes yet. Well, yes, flying cars, trains, and buses. They all exist already using hydrogen and cars.
And as you may know, what comes out of the tailpipe of these hydrogen vehicles is water. Hydrogen turns the body's dried up little morsels into water, hydrates them. You can get the AquaCure machine on OneRadioNetwork.com, created by George Wiseman. Incredibly safe, lifetime warranty, 1 year, no questions asked, money back warranty. If you don't like it, up to a year. Use promo code OneRadio, promo code OneRadio in our store, the Hydrogen AquaCure machine on OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's a short explanation how this product, Pearlseum, works with our teeth from Dr. Rulin Zhu.
So basically, when you brush your teeth with the pearl, make your existing teeth stronger and also filling up, because our teeth is being harmed every day by what we eat. It can become porous or weak, even loose part of the bones. So when you brush teeth with the Pearlseum, and the pearl powder will stimulate the new bone growth and also make the existing teeth very strong.
So it's actually stimulating new growth on the teeth in a natural way and not painting something over it?
It is very natural. It's make existing teeth stronger. New growth of the bone, it is very beautiful color. You know, it's kind of like a pearl. And especially the pearl is a crystal. And so when it grows, the bone is in the most healthy way.
Yeah, we love this product. Give it a try if you'd like. Click on the Pearlseum ad on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com. We have it set up to go to the two container where you get a nice discount. But if you only want one to start, just click over to the single bottle and get that one. It's the Pearlseum, the ad right on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com.
We talk about your health, wealth, and well-being on OneRadioNetwork.com.
The first Monday of the month brings us to Adam Bergstrom time. He's also here, what we affectionately call Adam 2.0, that is on the third Monday of the month at the same time. Dr. Ray Pete is here. Is he the third? I don't know. I have to look.
Vibrant Gal is nodding yes.
Okay, third Tuesday. He's a third Tuesday. Yeah, he's on a third Tuesday, which will be the 15th this month, right after Adam. I don't know how I keep track of these silly things. I got a little calendar. Is how we do it. Adam Bergstrom, his two websites, Yes, No, Maybe, Chronobiotic Nutrition. That's his book, excuse me, websites, SunSync Nutrition, and also solartiming.com, solartiming.com. Now, the SunSync, you pay, what, $99 forever?
That's forever. I got hundreds of blogs. And, of course, the recycling light where you go through black and gray and brown and red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet, and white. We just cleared the entire audience, including ourselves.
Oh, well, that's good. We need to be clear.
It's really important. You know, I don't know if anyone has heard of the Mogens-Solomon, sometimes known as the Mogens-David. It's the two interlocked triangles, and it's the secret of light. When GE talks about its light therapy, it identifies 430 to 490 nanometers as blue and green. Well, look it up. It's not green, so they reveal a secret that they don't want people to know, that violet and green are the same frequencies, and that's why the color wheel is a circle. It's not a linear circle. How do you go from violet to red and back again?
Yeah, how do you do that?
Yeah, and that's one of the magic of color therapy. See, Newton is criticized because there's the color indigo, which doesn't exist. Well, of course it exists, because color therapy is a septave. It's not a heptave, and it doesn't work. In fact, Colonel Dinshaw Gaudiali called Dr. Babbitt's work, and he was the one that put color therapy into the health field, he calls it ludicrous because he didn't understand that violet is opposed to green, and that we don't have red, yellow, and blue as primary pigments. We have red, yellow, and violet, or magenta.
So I wonder...
Violet.
So just because it's all kind of glopped together, the idea of a different trauma having a different color, it kind of works, doesn't it? Because it all makes sense when you look at the big picture.
when you look at it, now we are actually traumatized by everything in the spectrum. But to start, you have to start with the major trauma. And anytime a person is going to have a change of lifestyle trauma, he's going to have a red trauma. Red is going to show up. So people with that kind of trauma have to be careful with red light therapy. They better muscle test first, because they're going to put themselves into a worse problem if they're not using red between 6 and 9 in the morning. So there's differences there. Otherwise, you can use red anytime. Same with yellow or whatever kind of light therapy you're doing. And also people using monochromatic therapy. And I'm disappointed in Ray Peet going to an LED, because that's monochromatic light. Light was designed by GE specifically to be polychromatic, so that you get a center frequency and side frequencies so you can cover the trauma. Otherwise, if I have a red trauma, what's the shade? What's the tint? What's the intensity? It's not a pink trauma. It's not a maroon trauma. It's a red trauma. And that can only be handled by a polychromatic solution.
Wow, man, you're covering your bases there, babe. So if you have a kind of a moving trauma, meaning like changing jobs or moving your homestead, that would be a kind of a red event?
Definitely, or the threat of it. Like someone's going to take your house away. Obviously, you're going to get a moving trauma even before the event happens, or after. I've seen people with moving traumas that happened 40 years ago, and they thought they were over it because they felt fine. But then they're having all these other symptoms coming on, never connected it to the original trauma. That's why you find the time you had it, like stomach time if something happens. Then you do a color and find out where the threat was, and the color will answer it. When Donald Lay first did that, I thought, well, you can think of any color in the book, but really, you can't. And the more vivid the color comes up, the more traumatic it is.
The more vivid. Oh, I see. Yeah.
People, when I've asked them that question, they say, wow, I just saw a flash of green. What does that mean? And I said, it means that is a true trauma. Because otherwise, if you have to go thinking, what's the trauma? The color hasn't tuned in yet. But it is a color, and a color spectrum, we are colored of our thinking. And that doesn't mean it's clear. You don't go to a therapist to be colored of a trauma. You go to be cleared of a trauma. And that's the clear light. Carbon dioxide, by the way, is clear. It has no color. All of your other elements, oxygen is blue, hydrogen is red, chlorophyll is green, etc. But not carbon dioxide.
Hydrogen is red, huh?
It's red. And it's the beginning. You can't move without red. Red is actually red, you know, red to get you started. It's desire. We need desire. And talk about hydrogen, carbohydrate. It's hydrated carbon. Carbon's useless without desire. Desire even came before consciousness. Isn't that strange?
Yeah. I mean, somebody somehow said, I dreamt of something, you know, let's have people or something. God did, probably, you know.
According to the therapist, and there may be something to this, or scientists, that at the Big Bang, there was only hydrogen and helium, and it took more time to bring the others about. It just didn't happen instantaneously except for the first two elements, and that was hydrogen, which is desire, and helium, the Akashic record. You have to keep a record of all this.
Yeah, you don't hear too much about helium. Gets you high, right? Oh, helium.
It does. It makes your voice squeaky. But interesting enough that helium is not investigated much, and yet it's the second most abundant element in the entire universe. And we don't think it's important for our health.
Right under hydrogen, right?
That's right. Huh. Right after number two.
So I wonder, is somebody going to come up with a helium machine? We're going to be breathing that soon, too?
And lithium's pretty important. It's number three, but it's not as important as hydrogen and helium. There's a lot less lithium in the world than there is hydrogen and helium.
So the Big Bang Beaker Boys say that in the beginning, there were only really two gases? Or
that's all. And our sun can't produce it until it becomes a nova, and then we don't want to be here when that happens.
So maybe
I'm reminded of the guy that goes up to his professor and says, how long did you say till the sun's going to explode? 100,000 years. Oh, thank God. I thought you said 50,000 years.
So maybe if we take the fun kind of poetic thing of the idea that at one point, you know, God had a desire to, had dreamt the idea of doing something, right? So it, you know, created souls or created earth or created every, whatever, created something. Maybe it was just God, you know, just hanging out in one big pot.
Great, he doesn't even need consciousness.
Yeah, that's right, you know. And then maybe that's where the hydrogen came in, that one of the first gases. Maybe that's how it manifested the desire for this to come about. That's kind of fun to think about.
Hydrogen first, and will is nitrogen, and oxygen is consciousness. Those come later. They're up there in number 7 and number 8 in the periodic table of the elements. So the primary function is in the first three elements, are the most important to our existence. Now, for our life and our enjoyment of it, the other ones can be more important, even gold, you know. But for existence, it isn't existing without hydrogen and helium.
Helium. And what's the third one?
Lithium. That's an important one, a cure-all. And how you generate it, you don't even have to take it. All you have to do is put the tongue to the top of your palate, like yogis do, and you generate it within your body. You can take one atom of lithium and make it a cure-all for all diseases.
Just by putting the tongue up against the roof of the mouth.
Yep, and yet if you take the drug, it makes you stupid and it eventually kills you.
Makes you stupid.
Don't take the drug.
It just makes you stupid. Don't take that. Hi, Adam. Can we use decaf CO2 process to make cobalamin tonic? I love this stuff, but I think that the caffeinated is messing with my kidneys after a while. Does caffeine hurt the kidneys? Or?
No, it helps the kidneys.
Oh, it helps. But wait a minute. Okay.
But you still get benefits out of decaf. It's not as good as the caffeine, because the caffeine is the anti-cancer factor. That's important for that. But you can get anti-cancer factors elsewhere, so decaf is fine. There's caffeic acid. There's magnesium. It's one of the best sources of magnesium. And if you want magnesium, you get it in cocoa. You get it in maple syrup in high amounts, and you get it in coffee. So you got your magnesium almost for the entire day with a cup of cobalamin tonic.
So what about this emailer? I can't pronounce his first name, so I won't say it. And kidneys, and he or she, what are they thinking? What could they kind of explore rather than blame the caffeine on their kidney problem that they think they're having?
Other foods they're eating. Which block the kidneys, and that can be actually drugs probably do it. In our civilization, so many people are taking drugs now. One of the main things that damage the kidneys are protein pump inhibitors like Nexium and all of those purple pill type things. Bad. Those can damage. They claim now that if people are on those long term, they can have permanent kidney damage where they can't takes magnesium again ever. You can supplement with it and never be normal on magnesium. That's now, I don't believe in never, but the doctors can't handle it. So I would think if you're depending on mainstream medicine and you're taking a PPI in the first place, then perhaps you better think twice about it and stop before you end up with your damaged kidneys.
What other foods for this emailer, in case they're not on drugs, that they could think about to eat or not eat for their kidneys?
Well, of course, there's a whole list of that, but one of the best kidney foods in midday are kidney beans.
Kidney beans.
Or kidney beans, especially the broth. You cook them and cook them and cook them, and you drink the broth from either an azuki bean or a kidney bean or a lentil even. Mm-hmm. Lentils are good for your eyes. They're named after the lens of the eye. Lentils is what their correct name is.
Lentils.
So all of these foods I used to use for remedies, and now, you know, food is your best medicine, as I believe Henry Beeler and others have said, and we forget that. We want to go to some kind of chemical or nutrient. Any vitamin you buy, by the way, you cannot buy a vitamin in a health food store because they're actually approximations of vitamins. They can't construct a vitamin in a laboratory, and if they tell you they're getting the natural out of a plant, you're getting it in very tiny amounts. As soon as you get multiple milligrams, up to 50 or so, you're getting something synthetic. You're not getting a vitamin. But let's look at it this way. if I need an artificial heart to keep me alive, I'm going to take it. So that's good for those vitamins. But it's better to have a real, live, organic heart working than an artificial one. But you can still be alive with an artificial heart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sounds good. They got a PS. They said, could you please ask Adam about sulfur in his revisiting the elements of the periodic table as we know it? I'm not sure what they're asking, are you?
Well, sulfur is an advantage because it occurs in the period 3 of the periodic table of the elements. And a lot of people don't realize this, but salt grows tumors. Very quickly it grows tumors. But that's why we don't just eat salt. If you look at sodium, it's number 11 on the periodic table. And if you look at chlorine, it's number 17 on the periodic table. Right next to them sits magnesium, number 12, and sulfur, number 16, between. So for sodium to interact with chloride, it has to go through its next-door neighbor, magnesium, and sulfur's next-door, chloride's next-door neighbor, sulfur. And that's why magnesium chloride, not exactly Epsom salt, but a natural form of it, is a heart and tumor, a heart disease and a tumor preventative. So yes, as long as you're getting your magnesium and your sulfur, then you're protected from growing tumors from your sodium chloride.
Oh, we like that. Have you ever played around with magnesium bicarbonate, I think it is?
Yes, but it doesn't really absorb very well, as they've done in tests, and food works better. Now, if you look at a list of what foods have the highest magnesium, I actually eat 4 of them. First of all, let's see, I think it's nuts first, mm-hmm. and then coffee, cocoa, nuts, and avocado. I am all for breakfast.
Yeah,
right there
you are. You're getting your magnesium early on, dude.
And then Bueller's broth, potatoes. There's a whole bunch of foods that have it. And we don't need quite as much magnesium as they say. They claim that mother's milk can grow bones, and yet it's very, very low in magnesium. They usually claim that cow's milk, it's too low in magnesium. If you drink cow's milk, well, mother's milk is the same, because magnesium is magnesium. It's a trace element. It's not a big element. So you need more of the protein in the milk than either the calcium or the magnesium. But it's about a 12-to-1 ratio, calcium to magnesium. People want you to believe that it's a 1-to-1 ratio, which is absolute nonsense.
Just nonsense. Just nonsense.
And all you have to do is look at the assay of mother's milk. That's all you have to look at. And yet, I never saw a baby that couldn't grow bones using mother's milk. It's designed for bones.
So here we got one for you. I had a problem with my right middle finger clicking and popping, but doesn't do that anymore. Now my left middle finger is so painful that it's really painful to unscrew a lid or turn a doorknob, even left tip, butt cheek. Could it be too alkaline? I know my left is my husband. Oops. She goes. So she knows she's on to something, probably.
Yep. Time for Richard III.
What's Richard III?
That's what they call the middle finger.
Oh, Richard. She's giving her husband the middle, flipping him the bird subconsciously?
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
People, I've worked with people, and they talk about someone, and suddenly their finger starts automatically raises without help. By the way, I have a good friend of mine. She might even be listening to the show.
That's really.
I was working with her, and we tried the yawning, the stretching, the sticking out the tongue. Nothing was working. So I said, give the middle finger. And so she did it so poorly. I said, can't you give a better middle finger than that? That's not, no one's going to believe that one. And she said, I was taught in my home that was bad to do that gesture. So then I pressed hard on the reflex. She went, ouch, both those fingers came out, and her back was completely recovered immediately.
Isn't that great? That's funny. Flipping the Bird. I never heard Richard III. I've heard Flipping the Bird, but Richard III, that's a new one. Where did that come from?
It's in my slang dictionary, including the international gesture of recognition.
Yeah, that's right. It's known worldwide.
For people who want to take a walk on the wild side, I have a slang dictionary for sale, but it is so obscene and so scummy that you may not want to read it because you will not appreciate me as any kind of health expert if you read that terrible book. Yeah. But I'm selling it anyway.
Right.
I need the money.
Yeah, neither. So to this emailer then, so what do you think? Does she need to have kind of a, let's come to have a meeting with Jesus kind of talk with him?
The marital martial arts are the best thing going, according to Donald. We need a support and being around people. They know that when you're alone, I mean, truly alone, unless you're an advanced yogi or something, you're going to suffer. So it's good to work out that and look for the heart looks for similarities. The brain looks for differences.
Right.
So we look for the similarities to do that. Now, if it's totally unworkable, then you want to leave the person. But if you have kids and it is workable, it is better to work it out. And sometimes just gesturing. In fact, when the husband says something, you give the fingers and say, look, this is not about you. This is about my health. I'm doing this for me, not for you. Mm-hmm. So if I give the finger when you say something that I disagree with, don't take it personal.
Don't.
And that's a start. Meanwhile, find out if you're acid or alkaline. One way to do that, this is a ballpark way, but if you have a cough and you have a lot of mucus and your tongue is coated white, and I mean all day, not just in the morning when you wake up or if you're fasting, if it's white, then you're usually over acidic. If you have a red tongue and it's got cracks in it and you have a dry cough, and you have cracked skin but no fluid comes out of it, like an acidic person, then you're over alkaline. So those are good ballpark ways to figure out which it is. And those, of course, are extremely important because we have a whole range of over-alkaline diseases, and we have a whole range of over-acidic diseases. Hmm. Cancer is an over-acidic disease. Heart disease is usually an over-alkaline disease, et cetera. And the whole list goes on.
Here's an email for Carol, just a couple more before we go, on this Monday, October 7. She says, Carol's a girl, I just heard about low-dose LSD for creativity. Have you heard about this? Oh, man, they're going to come up with something, you know?
How about LSD oil?
LSD oil. Yeah, let's do some LSD oil.
There's whole books on it. Actually, I think it's National Geographic or one of those, Scientific American, puts out a whole magazine on CBD oil. It's such a big thing here. Even our olive oil guy is selling it now.
Yeah, everybody.
It's highly overrated, by the way, and very expensive. But, you know, there are some things, and pot actually has more sedative things. It's one of the best painkillers. They don't need opioids. All you need is some pot. I'm not a smoker of pot anymore, but sometimes it can help. I probably have told you when I worked for Wallman Optical, and the job was so boring that they told me, you're not keeping up with production. We're going to have to let you go if you don't speed it up. So I said, well, I'm giving notice, but I'm giving 2 weeks notice. So I went home and, well, at breakfast I had one toke or two tokes of pot, and at lunch I went home and had two tokes. My production increased so much, they said, we've never seen such an improvement. You're now our best employee. Won't you stay? And I said, no, I've already made arrangements to go now. That's well, funny. If you ever want to come back, we have a job available for you. But he didn't know that two tokes of pot in the morning, two at noon, and I made it through the day. So there are medical reasons for pot. I'm glad it's finally free. I don't smoke it as a recreational thing. And golly, I think the last time I had it when someone was going on cosmic vacation with cancer, and to handle it, I had a toke or two of it during midday. It's a midday product, by the way.
Okay, what about her question about low-dose LSD?
Oh, yeah. Okay. LSD definitely will increase your creativity. Cary Grant took hundreds of trips. They often called him Cary in the Sky with Diamonds. And many people have. Esther Williams was a big fan of LSD, and a lot of celebrities were taking it before it got made illegal. So LSD, I'm not going to recommend it because Art Linkletter's daughter committed suicide on it, and there's problems. Low dose, perhaps as a therapy, if they can find it legally. Are they going to Amsterdam or something like that? Or even Mexico, I believe you can take LSD now if you're not dealing it. I see nothing really wrong with it, except for the continuation of it. I think it seals the medulla oblongata, where you're kind of locked out of doing spiritual things.
Donald took
LSD. He was part of M. Ultra's experimental program.
Good for him. Yeah, MK Ultra. Carol, from my perspective, you know, on the LSD and the marijuana stuff, I truly believe my experience is that creativity comes from soul, spirit, and so the quieter you get and the more in touch with who you are as soul and allow that to flow through, that's where real creativity comes. My opinion, I could be wrong, but most of this other stuff, mushrooms, is all more mental, emotional, and you're getting more imaginative thing, which is not really creativity. The imagination just kind of comes up with something that it knows with a red dress on. So that's not really creative to me. I think Hollywood's a really good, or what's going on now in the film industry, Adam Bergstrom, it's not very creative, you know, not a lot of people. They're just kind of rehashing. You know, it's just very interesting, you know, what's going on. Now, there's a few, of course, at breakout movies, but...
It's moved to TV now. That's where the action is, where the quality thing is. The movies are all... They're designed for mindless teenagers who are taking too much omega-3 oils.
Right.
That's what summer blockbusters.
Now, when I said film, but I was talking about it all because I think it's all just becoming one blob now, even though Hollywood doesn't want to allow made-for-TV movies... You know, to win an Academy Award, right? Because they say, oh, they're not films. But anyway, that's another story.
They run politics. Yeah. That's one thing. Ever since Eisenhower, Robert Montgomery, the actor, was his advisor. He had a bedroom in the White House. They've known the value of it. Reagan, Kennedy. Kennedy was a media guy. I mean, his father owned Paramount Studios, for God's sake. So the movies have made these people. They know they make it. Lou Wasserman, Jules Stein. Those, they ran Hollywood, and the mob ran Hollywood, too.
And the mob.
By the way, as a side again, when we talk about supplements, anything can cause anything and anything can cure anything. So are you familiar with Julius Caesar Stein?
No.
He was Jules Stein, who was the boss of Lou Wasserman, and they ran Hollywood pretty much.
Sure, I know the name Jules Stein. Yeah, I know that name.
Anyway, Jules Stein got cancer, and they operated... And they took out the abdominal cancer. Then he got adhesions, so they took him out again, and then he had rectal cancer. So he had it all through him in 1959. Well, for some reason, he just recovered, and so he was better. 10 years later, he got cancer again, and this time it was everywhere, and he was dying. So they did his eulogy. They were arranging his funeral. They gave him a drug to fight the cancer, put him in a coma. He's in and out of a coma. So they gave up all hope. One young doctor thinks, what if it's a magnesium deficiency, and gives him intravenous magnesium, and by that evening, he's reading the stock reports in the Wall Street Journal and lived another 11 years.
Wow.
There's a good Hollywood story.
That's a Hollywood. Wow, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, they were in Hollywood. Wasserman and Scribner and... Jules Stein. But Jules Stein was the founder of MCA, Music Corporation of America, which virtually became
MCA,
Movie Corporation.
Yeah, we know MCA. Yeah, that's a music corporation. Yeah.
And they got Ronald Reagan to cover for him in 1952 as president of SAG. He did him a favor so they could be the host of Death Valley Days. They said, pass a law so they were exempt. We can be agents. We can make movies and TV shows, and we can buy Universal Studios. Actually, that was 1959. First, they got them in 52. Then in 54, they changed the laws again until Bobby Kennedy came down on them. And actually, that could have been fake, too, because Bobby Kennedy was hanging out with them after that. at the wife, Doris Stein's birthday party.
How do you know so much like movie history? I mean, what's up with that? How do you know?
I lived there at 7021 Hollywood Boulevard, right next to Brahma's Chinese. And I was a cab driver in Hollywood, which gives you a peculiar insider's look.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, that must have been fun. What year was that when you were a cab driver in Hollywood?
Let me see, 72, I believe it was. And I took celebrities. I picked up the prostitutes in the morning and took them home after they had been with the movie stars and all that. And met a lot of celebrities at the time.
For you.
And a lot of dope deals were done in the back of my cab, too.
I can imagine. Well, that was really in the Hollywood heydays, too. I mean, not the real 40s, 50s, which are pretty cool, but, you know, the 70s were still, Hollywood was still king of the hill, right, boy? Really.
Pretty wild. You know, you could drive down the street and see hundreds of prostitutes in mini skirts and no panties with their legs up until they finally passed a law because the tourists were so outraged by it they had to close
it down.
Had
to have a panty law? Well, that's a good idea.
You know, Cole Porter used to come into Hollywood and he was gay and Scotty Bauer got him 150 men that he had sex with and Kathleen Turner had sex with a whole bunch of women. And Spencer Tracy was gay and a whole bunch of...
Oh, you're just full of all kinds of Hollywood gossip, are you? Spencer Tracy was gay? Oh, man. No, come on, really? Not that it matters, but was he?
Kathleen Hepburn.
Yeah, they were fast friends.
She's the one that definitely... She had a thing for women, and she would only want one-night stands. So this guy, Scotty Bauer, operated out of a gas station on Hollywood Boulevard, and he would provide them for Rock Hudson, Gore Vidal, Kathleen Hepburn, Spencer Tracy, Rock Hudson, you name them. There were a whole bunch of them going on. And they couldn't be outed, so they actually had people like Eddie Mannix for MGM that would cover things over. Murders and transsexuals and all of that stuff. This was rampant in the 20s, 30s, and 40s. Hollywood was a virtual opium den in the 20s.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess when you're a movie star and you have a lot of money and a lot of time on your hands, you have all kinds of space to get into trouble.
You definitely do. Definitely do.
Did Adam say, Gary wants to know, did Adam say that taking magnesium supplements is hard on the kidneys?
It can be, unless you know exactly what you're doing and why you're doing. See, most people don't know that 95% of the magnesium's uptake. If you can't uptake it, you have a problem. And then you're going to have a problem absorbing. So it's been proven that the usual magnesium supplements they take are not very absorbable. And when they're not absorbable, they have side effects. Now, again, it's like an artificial heart for an emergency or something like that. But when you're taking magnesium orotate, amino acid chelated, magnesium oxide, magnesium chloride, and the worst is magnesium citrate. The citrates have been definitely proven to be rough on a person's kidneys. Huh. So why do that when it's so available in nature if you avoid McDonald's and places like that and French fries and you go for whole food? Whole food one of these days will get popular again, I hope.
Is there anyone, if you're going to do a magnesium supplementation, that's more absorbable or safer to take, in your opinion?
Probably the amino acid chelate I'd go with in small amounts.
Amino acid chelate?
Yeah, a real chelate. Now, is it chelated with glycine? Is it chelated with aspartate? Or is it chelated with gluconate? There's a big difference between those. And I would take the magnesium, what is it, biglycine or whatever, that type of chelate is probably the safest and has the less, unless you take too much, because too much magnesium, people with dysfunctional kidneys die from magnesium supplements commonly because the magnesium cannot be eliminated by the kidneys. So anybody with unhealthy kidneys better watch out. Make sure your kidneys are functioning properly.
Make sure they're happy.
You go for the doctor's test, and they can't tell. They claim they can.
Is it true that the kidneys love blue and purple foods?
Mm, Yes, no, maybe.
Yes, no, maybe.
So they have a therapeutic effect at that time. So that's a partial truth. Yeah, there is something to that. Because colors, basically, see, you need all the spectrum at all the acupuncture times. But weekly, you can rotate through that. Like you could eat red foods on Monday, orange foods on Tuesday, yellow foods on Wednesday, green foods on Thursday, blue foods on Friday, violet, black foods, and black foods on Saturday, and white foods on Sunday. There is some advantage to doing that.
That'd be fun.
A bit like taking deuterium, though, you know.
Yeah.
Its benefits are minimal, but it's kind of fun to do. And sometimes you learn things about your body, about your tolerance for red foods, orange foods, or yellow. These pigments resonate with light in very important ways. Well, these pigments are necessary for our body, and that's why we're colorful. Also, traumas occur there, but by putting the colors in sequence, you can actually mitigate a lot of those traumas and even overcome them.
Speaking of light, did you see the clip? Somebody sent me a clip of President Trump complaining about the CFLs and the LEDs. He says it makes them look orange. And he says, I don't know why they quit selling these incandescent lights. They're the best. He's always getting into trouble with somebody, isn't he? My God.
Hey, I'm getting the light trouble.
I know. It's like, where does he come up with this stuff?
He says, and LEDs are, to me, they're one of the worst things. I'm really disappointed that Ray Pete is using an LED light.
I think so, too. I don't like them. I don't like the way they look. I don't like the way they feel. I don't like anything about them. Man, the incandescence. But boy, you know, you go to the Home Depot and they have about, two or three fronts, what they call a front, you know, where it's faces you, right? You know what the front is. You work for a health food store. They got about two or three fronts of incandescence or four, and a 4,000 fronts of everything else, CFLs. And even President Trump said, I don't like these CFLs. They got chemicals in there that you're exposed to if they break. He said that in public.
They are very dangerous. They're worse than the LEDs. At least the LEDs, you're not going to have a hazmat
suit, yeah.
That's right. They don't need those to come out to your house because you're supposed to do that if those break.
They tell you if a CFL breaks to get a hazmat suit to clean it up. Yeah.
And how many people are really going to do it? So we're polluting the environment. People aren't going to call a hazmat. They're going to throw them in the trash.
They just throw them in the trash and end in the landfill, and God knows where they end up, you know, from there.
Poor garbage man. Jeez.
It's like, it's just hilarious, man, what's going on. It's just...
It's sad. I'm glad he said that. That is really good news.
I know. I was just pretty impressed with that he even knew about this. I think he has some people like his daughter or somebody there feed him all this stuff. You know, Dad, why don't you talk about this?
Somebody in his family is into health. I remember.
Oh, yeah. I think Ivanka is. I think she is.
Yeah, for sure. Because there was a guest on the Sulfur Hour when I was beyond that, and. They were talking about he has a strong, someone in his family is strongly into health. Maybe it is Ivanka.
And I think Melania is too, you know, coming from East European, you know, they're pretty kind of hardcore, you know, just good food and you know, that kind of stuff. I think she is too, I've heard, but, you know, who knows. But President Trump, I think he still likes McDonald's. He likes a lot of McDonald's.
Yeah, he does.
God love. Boy, is he taking his hits, huh? Jeez, man. Wow. Taking some thumps. You better do some more food better than McDonald's, man. Maybe we could hire you as like his personal physician. We could get him going here. Really cause a lot of problems with the globalist, man.
Yeah, he's funny. You know, the medical system is the worst. They put people in jail. Look at Gaudioli and his color therapy. Ended up in prison. They couldn't get him. The courts wouldn't do it, so they trumped up another charge and put him in prison. Wilhelm Reich, he died in prison.
My goodness.
And so many others we don't hear about that have actually died in prison just because they had an alternative form of therapy.
Sure.
And the doctors don't like it.
Sure. Look at Eustace Mullins' teacher was, what was his name? The fellow that they put in the nut house that uncovered all the banking stuff and taught Eustace Mullins about it. Let's Google.
I can see his picture in my head, but I can't think of him.
Eustace Mullins, mentor. We'll know it as soon as we see it. Ezra Pound.
That's right, Ezra Pound.
Ezra Pound, and he was, they call him a propagandist in Wikipedia. Oh, good, that's great. They call him a propagandist.
Well, you know, he did have a problem. He was broadcasting against the United States during the Second World War, living in Italy. So he really was lucky that he didn't get executed.
Yeah, fact, I think he was a Holocaust denier as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, and of course I know people who were in the Holocaust. I know people who actually knew the Angel of Death and things like that. So we just had a Donnell initiate who lived into her 90s, and all her family was wiped out. And a lot of my friends have had their families wiped out.
This is funny. Just the first page of Wikipedia. Got to love this one. Propagandist, Holocaust denier, disciple. Oh, I Googled Eustace Mullins, disciple of Ezra Pound. His best-known book, they're talking about Mullins. Okay, his best-known book is The Secret of the Federal Reserve, in which he alleges that several high-profile bankers had conspired to write the Federal Reserve Act for their own nefarious purposes and then induced Congress to enact it. That's alleged, right?
Jeez. Now, they leave out the most important book he wrote, the book where he said, don't take vitamins.
Oh, yeah, Murder by Injection, right?
Don't take vitamins, he said. He exposes how the vitamin industry came out, how it's all phony. It's right there. He was for food. Smart guy.
Yeah, I've got that book. You know, I've never read that. I never read that one. I got to do that. Murder by Injection.
And it gives the history of how the vitamin came about and how it's just a big scam. So,
wow. Yeah.
Don't want to know about that. They want to know about the Federal Reserve. Because think of it. If the Federal Reserve went down, are we going to get more money if the government takes over it? No, it's now in the hands of the government. Well, it's in the hands of the government and the bankers in the first place. So they just switch locations is all.
Yeah,
they
it wouldn't be buildings. It wouldn't be any different, except we wouldn't have debt because you would just create the money yourself,
which you already do. So there's going to be debt no matter what. And however it is, whether it's debt or not debt, I'm not going to gain any money from the Federal Reserve going down the tubes today.
No, they'll be
as poor. It's the alpha. If you look in nature, the animal with the biggest horns gets all the ladies, or the biggest you-know-what gets all the ladies, or the most money, they get it. And it's always the rich and the poor. It has nothing to do with isms and politics and communism and capitalism. Those who got the power have the club, and they club the poor people. As J.C. Waterwalker said, the poor will always be with us. So don't even bother with it. Take care of your own consciousness, and then you will be in a bubble of protection if you take care of yourself.
Whoa. Adam
Sweep
Berks
in front of your own poor,
you
and the whole world will be clean. Girder said that.
What was the last part? Say it again.
Sweep in front of your own door, and the whole world will be clean.
That's brilliant. I love that. Sweep in front of your whole door, and the whole world.
Your own door.
And it's so true, isn't it? Who said that?
Girder.
Gurdjieff, huh?
G-O-E-T-H-E.
How do you pronounce it?
Wolfgang von Goethe.
Goethe.
I've heard him pronounced so many different ways. I'm taking a chance on Goethe, but I think that's as close as I'm going to get not being German.
Yeah, sweep in front of your own door, and the whole world will be clean. Is that what he said? Wow.
Yeah, that's it.
That's beautiful. Huh? That's a nice way to end it. I'm going to go sweep my porch or go outside in the sun, and 75 degrees here in Dripping Springs. What do you think? Whoa.
That's nice. Yeah. We're having a nice day here, too. One P.S., Goethe was an expert in color therapy.
What?
You want to know about color therapy? Read Girder, he knew more than Newton did. End of story.
End of story, period.
And you know, here in California, in the People's Republic of California.
People's Republic of California. Okay, kiddo, well, you guys have fun. We will see you in a couple of weeks. Drink your milk, get a milk stash and see how you do. How about Vibrant Gal, does she drink milk?
She wants cream.
Oh.
When we were in New Zealand and came back here, we couldn't get decent cream there. So we got the first cream. She drank the whole half pint of it, and had a milk mustache. And boy, then she was satisfied.
Oh,
she loved cream. Yeah. And cream is better for you than milk anyway.
Oh, yeah. But you know, I tried to cook cream like a la, you know, Ayurveda. And man, it's weird, man. It doesn't work, does it?
Yeah. Yeah, you don't have to cook the cream, but the milk you do. And regular milk is okay. Don't fall for low fat and no fat. Those milks are harmful. But regular milk is fine. Well, I won't go into any more. It's time to sign it. But anyway, we can continue that.
We'll see you soon. Okay, we love you all very much. Thanks a lot for everything. We'll see you real soon.
You too.
Sure. Let us know if we can do some. Okay. Bye. Patrick Timpone and Adam Bergstrom. Yes, no, maybe Cronabiotic and Nutrition, his book, Sunsink Nutrition, and solartiming.com, his website. We're going to have Dr. Marianne Teitelbaum on the show tomorrow. That'll be fun. And then also a pretty cool Wild Wednesday hair-raising adventures on Wednesday. We're going to have somebody there that we have scheduled. So I'll see you all. Let me know if I can help with anything. I love you all very much. You're doing good. You're doing the best you can. Don't believe that dumb old mind of yours that keeps telling you you're a dumb ball. Don't believe that. Just keep moving forward. You'll be fine. Clean the house. Do whatever. Go out and take a walk. Take a shower. Do something. May the blessings be.
We are listener supported. One Radio Network.